Good morning then, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We do have on the usher's table a document called the United Lodge of Theosophists Declaration, which in succinct language puts forth the basic method by which we operate, not only here in Philadelphia, but any United Lodge of Theosophists that may be found around the world. So we are all united in our effort by these ideas. But to summarize them briefly, the main idea is that we are a voluntary association of students and inquirers into this ancient wisdom called theosophy. Theosophy is a word itself that means spiritual knowledge or divine wisdom. And it has come down in various forms through the ages in every great nation, race, and civilization. The most complete expression of this wisdom, which at one time might be considered secret or only the very few who had made the effort to be initiated into such wisdom could obtain it. Its most complete expression to date can be found in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And so we are here to help spread broadcast these teachings as recorded in those writings. But also in our more general work, we put forth the fundamental principles, the basis of thought and action, which underlie the entire system of theosophy, which is at once scientific, philosophical, and religious. Not only because these universal ideas can be found in all great philosophies and religions, but because they give us greater insight into our real nature and the fact of universal brotherhood. And so for those who are desirous of making themselves better able to help and teach others and thereby perform a true service of humanity, this is very helpful. So there are many other important ways we can help humanity, but for the focus of this effort, they're side issues. And so our work here is concentrated on the dissemination and putting into practice of these ideas. So this is not an organization as such with constitution, bylaws, officers. What holds us together is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. And of course, our individual determination to study and help in the work in any way we want to. And so all are welcome to attend. Any kind of contribution that is made is entirely voluntary. There is no obligation imposed or implied. All the work here is done voluntarily. And if you would like to know how you can contribute in terms of time, service, and money, you can ask the student at the book table. So in keeping with this general declaration of policy, we here in Philadelphia have two weekly meetings on Sunday mornings, as today, from 11 to 12. We have a more formal presentation of the philosophy of theosophy. Each month is devoted to a particular theme. The doors open at 10:30, and as we said, our meetings go from 11 to 12 noon promptly. So the overall title of the theme for this month is Psychism and Spirituality, and today we are considering the subject of dreams and the dreamer. Next week is a very fascinating subject which many people would not be familiar with, because we think many have heard or maybe even interested in pursuing the development of psychic powers, but they may not be familiar with the difficulties and risks involved in that. And so the subject for next week is the benefits and risks of developing psychic powers. On Wednesday evenings from 7:30 to 8:30, we have a study class. And this season, we've been using The Ocean of Theosophy, a book written by William Q. Judge. And each chapter is devoted to a particular subject. We are reaching the latter part of the book, and correspondingly, we are having studied the basic principles that underlie the universe and the various laws and principles operating in the human being. We are now considering the operation of psychic forces and phenomena. And so the name of the class, the study class for this coming Wednesday, is Clairvoyance and Clairaudience. Clear seeing, clear hearing. Refer to those developed psychic powers. So of course, all are welcome to attend. The building on Wednesday opens at 5:15. We have a library on the first floor. It is a reference library where one can find a variety of books on theosophy, as well as art, literature, science, philosophy. There's a student there to help you in your individual resources, and you of course can find the subject matter to be studied for that evening and a reference if you've not had the opportunity. We also have a website, ultphiladelphia.org, in which you can find many things related to the activities of the lodge, access to literature, as well as podcast recordings of our meetings. So in the front of the building here, we have a book table upon which is displayed straight line theosophical literature. And by that, we mean the exact photographic reproductions of the original writings of theosophy as put forth in the 19th century by H.P.B. and William Q. Judge. So they're available for individual study, direct access to the teachings. There's a variety of books, pamphlets, magazines there available. Of course, these are available in the library and they are all available online. So if you do purchase them here, though, you should be aware that they are available at cost of their publication and shipping. There's no profit made by this lodge from the sale of these books. All money necessary to keep this building and this effort going here in Philadelphia is through the voluntary contributions of friends, associates, and visitors. So having said that, we'd like to move directly now into our matter for this morning. This is coming under the large umbrella topic of psychism and spirituality, dreams and the dreamer. And for those not familiar with the subject in general, it might seem odd that dreaming would even be considered a psychic phenomena or even a spiritual one. But we think after today's class, you'll have hopefully a deeper and more practical understanding of this subject. So our format today is what we call a forum. There is a short talk followed by ample time for your questions and comments. So we'll now have a student volunteer come up to present this talk, Dreams and the Dreamer.
Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. Guide me through the starry night and wake me when the sun shines bright. Good morning, dear hearts. That little bedtime prayer dates back to the early 1700s and was usually followed by good night and pleasant dreams. Perhaps, just perhaps, that was the genesis of our fascination with the world of dreams. This morning, we will introduce you to this dream realm only, as it would be impossible to cover this intriguing and fascinating subject in just one short hour. We will merely hit the high points and hopefully stimulate lots of questions. To begin with, this discussion of dreams from a theosophical point of view, there may be a need for you to reevaluate what you think is the true nature of man. It is evident to all that every 24 hours we pass through two states, the waking and the sleeping. But theosophy goes further and teaches that the sleeping period is itself divided into two states, designated by two hard to pronounce Sanskrit words, which actually mean the dream state and the state of dreamless sleep. Thus we all pass through and live upon three planes of life and consciousness every time the earth marks one revolution upon its axis. The connecting link between these three planes or states of consciousness is the immortal soul itself. Because of this ever-present link, the three planes of human life do not and cannot stand isolated from one another. Herein lies the importance of sleep and dreams. The waking state is influenced by the sleeping states, and the sleeping states are profoundly affected by the waking condition. So that an understanding of all three states and their interrelationships becomes of prime importance. There is something in each of us which enters the various states of consciousness, such as the awake, the dreaming, and the dreamless state. No understanding whatsoever can be had of these states into which we pass and from which we emerge, unless the idea that there is a thinker, a perceiver, a knower, and an experiencer who enters and reemerges from these states, and that this is the real and immortal man. And this real man retains his integrity, his continued identity throughout all of these transitions. Theosophy calls this thinker, this perceiver, this knower, the I, and I am I, the ego. So an understanding of the states into which we can go and cannot be had until we recognize that there is us, that there is in us that which goes through them all. Then we must try to understand what that something is. When we get this fact fixed firmly in our minds, we will have reached the point of understanding that there is an immortal nature in each of us, that it is divine in its essence, our spiritual nature not subject to change, for it is changeless. So what does that have to do with the world of dreams? This understanding of a spiritual, immortal man and a physical man is absolutely key to our other states of consciousness. St. Paul recognized this clearly when he said, there is a natural body and a spiritual body, and that therefore we must of necessity have a double set of senses. I'm sure that at one time or another, you have been told or have said it about yourself that he or she could sleep through a bomb going off or a marching band parading through the bedroom. Well, if their physical senses are that unaware of what is going on around them. If their senses are so totally dead to the environment, how is it that they are able to talk, to walk, to swim, to drive, to taste, to smell, and do anything else they want to do when they are asleep? It's quite obvious that we must have all of our senses in dreams, although the body is dormant and the sense organs are not in use. We can still see and feel, we hear, we talk, we act, just as we do in our waking state, without using the physical organs associated with those sensations and actions. This shows that we are conscious, alive, existent, although the body knows nothing. We know further that our identity is not disturbed by entering this dream state. It is we ourselves and none other experiencing that state. So what are some of the details of these three states? Awake, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. The first event that happens is that your physical body is overcome with the essence of life. The energies of life in your body need to rest, to regenerate, to restore its stamina to face the trials and energies of another day. You must go to physical sleep for this restorative process to take place. You have just transformed from the awake state to the dream state. As your outer senses are dulled, the brain begins to throw up images, the reproductions of waking acts and thoughts, and soon you are asleep. You have now entered a plane of experience which is as real as that just point, only that it is of a different sort. We may roughly divide this from the waking life by an imaginary petition on one side and from dreamless sleep by another petition on the other. In this region, you wander until you begin to rise beyond it into the higher. There, no disturbances come from the brain action, and you are a partaker to the extent your nature permits of the banquet of the gods. But you must return to the waking state, and you must get back by no other road than the one you came. For as dreamless sleep extends in every direction, and the dream state under it also in every direction, there is no possibility of emerging at once from dreamless sleep into the awake state. And this is true even though on returning, no memory of any dream is retained. Dreams are at times very vivid and real, and to some, have been life-changing. To help you further understand dreams, H.P. Blavatsky has categorized dreams into 7 classifications as follows. Prophetic dreams, allegorical dreams, dreams sent by adepts, retrospective dreams, warning dreams, confused dreams, and fanciful dreams. Once we recognize that man is the inhabitant, not the product of the body, the power of remembering more and more of our nightly experiences can be cultivated. As Job discovered, in dreams and visions of the night, man is instructed. According to HPB, it is by cultivating the power of what is called dreaming that clairvoyance is developed. Life is one grand school of being, and we have come to that stage where it is time for us to learn to understand the purpose of our existence, to grasp our whole nature firmly, to use every means in our power, in every direction, waking, dreaming, sleeping, or in any other state, to bring the whole of nature into harmony, into accord, so that our lower instrument may be in line, and thus will more and more fully reflect our divine inner nature. And finally, from a lesser known but obvious philosopher, Jackie Gleason, our dreams are first-hand creations. We have the capacity for infinite creativity, at least while dreaming. We partake of the power of the Spirit, the infinite Godhead that created the cosmos. Once again, dear hearts, the topic for today is dreams and the dreamer.
As we were listening to that final quote, it becomes obvious too that in the totality of our being, we are much more and much greater than can be expressed throughout the personality of this life. So whether we are a stage comedian or a student or a parent or a worker in the fields, that's just the personality's condition in this life. But the very fact that such perception and wisdom and creativity can be brought forth from the individual in the brain, in through the dreams, and be made a practical reality on this physical plane, indicates that in our higher nature and our deeper nature, we are much more than appears to the physical eye. And that's the great lesson today of dreams and the dreamer. So we invite your questions and comments back.
How come, based on what you just said, of any one of us as a capacity, as a spiritual being, I can't remember my dreams?
Mm-hmm. Well, many people do remember their dreams. Some people have different capacities for recollection of the dreams. We know this has something to do with the brain, because the foods we eat, the medicines we may take, the activities we involve ourselves in the day, can affect how vivid or clear our dreams are and how well we remember them. How often have you gone through a day where you worked continuously from 6 o'clock in the morning and till 12 o'clock at night, and you can't wait to get in that bed, and you don't even remember your head hitting the pillow, and the next morning you're up again. The whole experience of dreams and the night may seem like an instant, and yet other times we wake up refreshed and are aware of having a very vivid, instructive, multidimensional dream state, which was instructive and entertaining and amazing, to put it briefly. So it is clear then that this physical brain is an instrument on this plane through which dreams and the experiences of the dreamer have to come through. But we know that the brain on this physical plane, as we awake, becomes more and more involved and sensitive to the sensory environment and impressions. And these begin to, as soon as we begin to awake, cloud out and overcome and distort the dreams. So we may all go through the dream state and may all have dreams, but bringing them forth and remembering them is a different thing. So what Theosophy points out, and not just Theosophy, but various ancient traditions around the world, say that the dreaming itself can be cultivated can be made more powerful, as well as access to the creativity of dreams can be made more powerful, and our ability to remember them and recall them and make them more useful in this life can also be developed. But like any other capacity, it needs to be self-consciously developed. Now, was there a follow-up point?
Just that, if I can't remember, does the quality of the deep sleep state have its effect on me and even on my brain?
Yes, well, I'm sure we all ate 2 weeks ago. Does the fact that we can't remember what we ate, have we lost the benefit of that? Maybe we ate yesterday, we don't remember what we ate. Does the fact that we can't remember exactly what we ate mean that we didn't benefit from it? Of course not. So, but if we could remember those things, it certainly would be more useful to us. So it is stated, as was put out for, that the waking, sleeping is a cycle like everything else in the universe. Periodicity is a universal law. As we see the rising, appears to be the rising and setting of the sun and the revolutions of the earth and the earth around the sun and the planets, we too go through our daily cycle and revolution, but we are the same individual thinker, perceiver, soul, or ego, if you will, depending on where you're coming to this subject from. We're the same witness, whether we're in the waking state, the dreaming state, or the deep sleep state. And we need to go into that deep sleep state. Even the criminal, the whatever the condition we are in this physical life, there is a real individual, a soul, if you will, working through that, maybe not able to express the complete aspect of its soul, but a witness there, and experiencing in the deep sleep and benefiting from it. So without that deep sleep, we would soon lose our physical and mental and vital health on this plane. And we know this from sleep deprivation. It is very difficult to brainwash somebody. The only way you can really brainwash somebody is deprive them from sleep and force them to eat a very low-protein diet. But anybody... Most people could be brainwashed if for a certain period of time they were deprived of sleep, because after a while all their cognitive faculties would be confused and overcome by various sensory and emotional inputs. They would lose all their sense of reality, and we know this from sensory deprivation studies where they deprive people from access to proper sensory experience. People who even miss sleep. There are studies of Americans in general, and how the fact is, as a society, we get lesser and lesser sleep, and the impact that this has on our health mentally and physically. So we need to go through that state, and having tasted of it, that deep sleep spiritual state, even though we don't remember it, we bring forth its strength, its revigorating potential, and we come back into life more refreshed, not just physically and mentally, but we say more charged in all our aspects for the day to come. We still have to face the problems where we were and the conditions we've created for ourselves on our plane, but we benefit from that nightly experience of sleep. Yes, here.
You hear a lot, and I can't remember the word, about the ability to know that you are dreaming and to act from that knowledge within the dream. As I say, I can't remember the word, but it's very popular now. People talk about it. What I wanted to know is that truly possible? Can we take into the dream state our knowledge of self?
Well, there's 2 points there. We think you were talking about the idea of lucid dreaming, which
yes.
is a possible. Popular term, but we'll get to that in a moment. So, we do not know the moment in which we go to sleep. We're up, we're awaking, we're thinking, and the next, bef- before we know it, we're dreaming or we're in a deep sleep state. We're not aware of that transition. And yet we go through the states. We're just not aware. We don't know how to bring, generally, consciously, the experience from one to the other so that nothing's lost. It's not unbroken. So it would be like traveling from one country to another, and you get to the country and you forget where your luggage was. And then you have to start from there. So it would be useful to us to be able to self-consciously carry the lessons and experiences, whether it's from the deep sleep state or the dream state, into waking consciousness, and retain our sense of individual identity and perception into the dream state. And when you think about it, there are times when, for those of you who do remember having dreams, when you are in the dream as yourself, and there's a time when you're not in the dream as yourself, but you're sort of in the background witnessing the dream as something that's happening to somebody else, or maybe to you, but you're sort of in the back witnessing it. And there are some times when you're witnessing, but it seems just to be like a fantasy, all sorts of allegories and symbols that don't make any sense. But in either case, you're aware. There's a witness there. There's an experiencer there. The dreamer, we say, and it's the same witness who is here now listening to this lecture, participating, just like the same witness here now was there observing when you were a child. It's the same continuity of identity, and we know how to bring through the experience of childhood into our current state. Well, wouldn't it be great if we could bring through the experiences of the different states of consciousness? And that is something that can be developed. However, we first, as was pointed out in the talk, have to become aware of that this idea of the dreamer is not the product of the brain. It's not a phenomenon. It's the reality. We are in truth, in reality, meaning that which endures and does not change is ourselves as spiritual beings, as thinkers, independent of the condition of the body of the brain. Once we dwell on that idea, and that becomes a reality and provable to us through our daily experience in waking life, that we can in all conditions be aware that we are the perceiver of what we're going through. We can watch ourselves as we react to different situations. Once we develop that, we can carry that into dreams. That's called lucid dreaming, when you actually can observe the dreams and change the experiences in the dreams. But theoretically, once you're in that condition, you're awake. You're awake to yourself as an individuality. You know, for the really developed human being, what we call an adept, they have to put their bodies to sleep, but they're continuously awake as spiritual beings on this plane in the dream, what we call the dream state and the deep sleep state. Except for them, they can bring fully conscious with them the experience of all these states into the present condition. As Job said, in the dreams and visions of the night, the human being is instructed. Yes.
That's very weird that you just said that, because my question to you was that statement of Job, is there a difference between the dream and the vision?
Mm. Well, what Job meant by dreams and visions was that, as HPB said, there are different categories of dreams. There are warning dreams in which we may be warned about something that's going to happen to us or happen to somebody else. We think of the dreams of Joseph, for example, in the Bible. There are prophetic dreams, once again, in the Bible and throughout the Old Testament. We see examples, even in the New Testament, of those kinds of dreams. Dreams sent to us as instructional dreams, as Job was speaking of, sent by wise individuals. And we do know from scientific studies that a dreamer, somebody in the dream state, is in a psychic state where what they're dreaming can be affected by the thoughts of other people directed towards them. There can be almost a sharing of certain dream content. And then besides those warning and instructional dreams and dreams of past incarnations and deja vu type dreams, there are the more fanciful, allegorical dreams that we have to struggle a little bit more to see what they mean, and sometimes we're just confused, and sometimes we just had a nightmare. We ate too much, drank too much, worked too much, were too much concerned about a particular problem, and it just blows up and gets all confused. So there's two types of dreams, what we call fanciful dreams that don't seem to make any sense. They're just the spontaneous replay of impressions in the brain and in our desire nature from experiences during the day. But then since we have to pass through that same dream state on our way back from the deep sleep state, we bring with us the experiences in our highest spiritual nature. And as it comes through, it's filtered by our psychic emotional nature, and we can experience it as a really instructive dream. There are many examples among individuals. Kekule, seeing the formula for the benzene ring in his dreams. Singer seeing the idea of the sewing machine in his dreams. Robert Louis Stevenson seeing the concept of his Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So many examples of instructions of creative ideas coming through in dreams. This comes from the experience of the dreamer, the ego, in these highest spiritual states. And so we may in our own lives have had experiences like that that got us very fascinated into this idea of dream, but we didn't know where they were coming from or what their significance was. Yes?
Well, a lot of times dreams aren't very obvious. They seem somewhat abstract, like you dream of a big boat and you're on this boat and then all of a sudden it changes and you're falling down into darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And we ponder on them, but we you know, like Jung and so forth, others interpret things symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
Is this where we should head, or should we use some of the understandings that we read in Theosophy to try to integrate those ideas?
Okay. So this question is directed to the very idea of the language of the dreams. So for our expressing the thoughts impressions and knowledge we have in our minds, expressing it on this plane, we have verbal language and we have written language. But what are they? They're all symbols, and if you understand the symbols, then it makes perfect sense to you. But if you are not raised in a culture where you understand Hindi or Spanish, you could be listening to those symbols and you have no idea. Maybe from the inflection of their voice and the expression on the face, you get some idea, but you have no idea of the meaning of those symbols. So the soul also has a language. Why not? We are the same thinkers, and we need a way of expressing our experience on those highest planes. And it comes through the language of symbolism. And so our dreams are symbolic representations of the experiences of the soul on those different states. But as said, they can be confused, they can be allegorical, they can be direct experiences. Just think about the times you tried to express yourself. How many times in your life have you really been able to express yourself clearly on an idea you had in your mind? Sometimes you're very good at it, but sometimes you're, depending on how much sleep you've had or what's going on in your mind, you may babble on incoherently, you may say something which makes perfectly good sense to you, and it can offend somebody and have an impression on somebody, that you had no, you didn't mean that. It's all how they perceived it, okay? So if this, you have to bring that same practical common sense idea to the this world of dreams and the symbolism. The symbol of the dream is very personal to the dreamer. It has a meaning to them. It's an expression of their experience. And what it means for them may completely different from what it means to you. Or even expressing what they experienced in the dream may be completely different to how it appears to you. So they may be a king and have a dream about their kingdom, but a pauper may have a dream about being a king, and it has a completely different meaning to them because they are not a king on this plane. So symbols are relative to the experiencer, the karmic condition of the individual. Now, you had your hands up.
Yes. Getting back to you, when you were saying about being brainwashed, but if you're being brainwashed by the person or persons, they would, if they had some idea of your belief and what you believe in and how you perceive things, it would be more easier for them to brainwash you in a way that could control you. That can control you in a way that you can harm your own self. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It is very difficult to brainwash somebody by trying to convince them, even if you have an understanding of what they believe, by just trying to present them an argument. How many times have you heard on the commercials that cigarette smoking is bad for your health? How many of you really believe that it is good for your health? How many of us can really kick the habit of smoking if it's a problem? Well, we're using that as an example, but take any example. So unless you are in a very passive, open, suggestible state, it is very difficult to overcome cognitive conditioning. If it was, Jesus, Moses, Krishna, Buddha could come forth and in one life change the world forever. Because they made very cogent, powerful arguments. Not only that, they demonstrated their powers and the way of life. How come not only are their teachings changed, but it's like they never were here for some people? It takes more than what you're suggesting to. And so when we're using this term brainwash, we're using the general understanding to be able to put somebody under your will in their waking state is very difficult. It's only we become very passive. Either we're half asleep or we are in a sleep state or in a very psychic trance-like condition that we are susceptible. And this, by the way, is a lead-in to sort of pique your interest for next week on the subjects of the risks of developing psychic powers, because it's that passivity is part of the risk. But that's all we're going to say about it. Okay. Yes.
I guess this goes along with the developing the psychic abilities and the dreams, right? So my question would be, when you're asleep, would it be possible to be connected to somebody or to have a connection to somebody else, whether or not they're asleep or not?
Yes. Good question. Remember, one of the dreams is dreams sent by adepts. Well, if you're familiar with that idea, you get the sense that when we're in that condition, we become open to the impressions, the instruction of others. But it is also possible for those who have their will bent against us, who want to use us, who want to take advantage of us in that situation, it is impossible, because we are in that passive state, for them to impose their will on us. So the dream state is a passive condition, unless we are fully awake and conscious and using them, such as in the state of lucid dreaming, which takes, it's just not going to happen overnight. You have to develop that ability. So if you are a if you've trained yourself in psychic development, in order to do that, you've had to open up your inner senses. We spoke of this, the same inner senses we use in dreams. You've had to open up those senses while in the state, in that state, to impressions from those inner realms while you're in that state. The problem is, once the doors open, you don't necessarily have the skill or knowledge to know how to close it. So what happens if you leave your door open in certain areas? Well, your neighbors may come in, but snakes and rodents and insects, they can all come in too.
Right.
So once you open your inner powers up to these inner senses, you expose yourself to everything, good, bad, and indifferent, that's on that plane. And you do not necessarily have the knowledge and control to shut the door, because you haven't developed that discrimination. So if you have trained yourself in psychic powers, then in your dream state, you are automatically more susceptible to the influences passively of others. If you have not, your own nature is like a shield and a protection. What is it that said that Sir Gawain, because of his purity of heart, his purity of intention, he had the power of 1,000 men. Being allegorical of the idea, it is the purity of our own consciousness that is sort of an inner shield to these influences. But if we've opened ourselves up to them, then it's a new game. And that's the dangers in the sleep situation. Yes?
Two things. On the mention of the benzene rings,
yes.
We're not certain if this was the experience, but we think that that gentleman woke up in the morning and declared that he had discovered it, but he couldn't remember the dream. And then he realized he had gotten up during the dream and written it down.
Yes.
So he had it. Now, for all of us, a good way to discover some of the connection with our own symbolism is to write down every dream we remember when we do wake up in the morning.
So when you think of how you come into the waking state, once again, you don't remember the moment, just like you don't remember the moment you go to sleep at night, you don't remember the exact moment you wake up. All you know is at some point, you're aware of some point of either been dreaming or sleep, and now either because of the alarm clock, some music, something somebody says, something you smell, or maybe it's just your body's inner cycle, you now become gradually aware of yourself as conscious on this plane. You begin to remember yourself, oh, that's who I am, and I got to get up and get to work, and my body aches as I get out of bed, or I'm feeling great, you know, got to go exercise. Whatever it is, you become more and more, and all these experiences begin to flood in. But remember, you didn't remember waking up. So all these experiences are coming in before you have a chance to reflect on the dream. So it becomes a good practice, that's the word, it's not going to happen automatically, to keep, you say a pencil and paper, but you, now can you keep your cell phone, your smartphone, whatever, your tablet, whatever it is, by your bed. So as soon as you become aware, you jot down quickly the idea. We heard Lin-Manuel, the producer and writer of the Broadway hit Hamilton, saying how that one of the ideas for his song came to him, one of the best songs in the show came to him when he was on his honeymoon, but he had no place to write it down. And he said the whole honeymoon he had to keep replaying this tone, music in his mind, so he wouldn't forget it until he got to a point where he could write it down, to get it down on paper. Apparently Mozart composed the same way. He saw the whole score in his mind in a dream and then woke up and wrote it down on a piece of paper. So we have to do that, practice that ability as soon as we become consciously aware to write it down, and that will help us remember and bring forth experiences and dreams. But also as we begin to develop our control of our minds and memory on this plane, remember, the way we act on this plane is a strong influence on the dreaming state. So as we become more clarified in our thinking and our feeling and control of our memories and control of the brain itself is plastic, and researchers know now that the brain function, the very connections and operations of the brain are influenced by the power of our imagination and thinking. The more we do that over time, we train the brain to be more receptive, more responsive, more connected, and more impressionable to the experiences of the dreams, and hold them longer to give us a chance to work with them on this plane. Yes?
When you were answering the first question, you mentioned that dreams were multidimensional. Is that multidimensional related to the multidimensional theories that we read about in quantum physics?
We meant multidimensional in the sense that our experiences and dreams don't follow the same rules of time and space that we have. There's a whole different universe of law operating there. Not only are we using different senses, but we can fly in dreams, we can go back and forth in time with dreams, we can meet people from different ages in dreams, we can see ourselves and different people change overnight in their appearance. In other words, it's multidimensional. The rules of time and space, the cause and effects that happen in dreams are, everything's operating on a different plane of reality. And we say that because we're in a dream, the experience does not seem subjective to us. We can look back now and say, oh, I dreamt last night. It was a subjective experience because we're in this objective experience now in this room, and the dream was something we remember. But when we were in that dream, it was the reality for us. It was the objective reality. And it is also true that is the case in the deep sleep state that we, for most of us, we can't bring back. When we are in that state as perceivers and look directly on truths and ideas and experiences, they are an objective reality to us, as real, more real than the experiences of this plane. The experiences of this plane are illusionary. This table seems solid, doesn't it? It's not solid. Physicists will tell you it's not solid. You think it's solid because that's the way your eyes work. That's the way your eyes work. The vibrations in here are so fast that your eyes can't pick them up, and so the image, the idea gets transmitted to you that it's solid, and you react to it as though it were solid. But in reality, we can approach this from the point of this is a phenomena, a visible perceptive phenomena of the operation of molecules that we have to interpret and work with. The reality and what we perceive is different. So it's the same way in dreams. There's a dimension working there. It's experience, there's laws working there that are not operational here. Did you want to follow up?
Yeah, I get your opinion on theory that I've been working on for a number of years, that dreaming, that when you're in a dream state, you are going through these multi-dimensions, and that when you wake up, you're in that particular dimension that you were last dreaming of. So what I've been practicing, so to speak, is if I have a good day, I think that I woke up in a good dimension, so to speak, and I try to stay up as long as I can because everything is going fine. And if I have a bad day, I imagine that I woke up in a bad dimension, and so I try to go to bed as quickly as
possible. Okay, that's a stress technique, right? Stress coping technique, and some people do that. Well, so what the term theosophy would use for what you're referring to mention is states and planes of consciousness. States of plane. So consciousness is one, it's universal. It exists on many different planes, not just on this, in this universe, in this solar system, in this earth, but also within the human nature itself. So we know throughout the day we can be in different, what we call states of consciousness. And sometimes we can be in a very dark place, and then sometimes we're in a very illuminated space within our own nature. Okay, so we are multidimensional in that sense. But throughout all that, the thread, and this is the point, the thread that is persistent provides the continuity through all those dimensions or states and planes of consciousness is the perceiver, the knower. What is happening there is that there's a change in the instrument that is being used, and with each change in the instrument, we see different senses and powers and faculties available. So we might say we have psychic, mental, spiritual, and physical senses and powers, but the one who is using them on each of those planes is the same soul being who's developed the potential for using them on all those planes. Okay? So what you're describing is a way in which you can experience something on one plane and recreate it, reimagine it, or reproduce it on another. So you can carry it through. But you can only do that through the power of your own individual being to bring forth those experiences. We think there was another hand. Was it? Yes.
I was listening to you when you were saying when you have a pure heart and you take in everything, it opens a door for you taking in everything. Some things you don't want to ingest within yourself. And once it's there, dealing with it, it's hard, but how can you reverse what's been taken in that you don't want?
Well, we spoke of the term a good heart, and it sounds very literary and idealistic, but you can go online and look up and Google the word heart math, and you will be connected to a world of scientists and researchers and doctors in cardiology and neurology who have proven that the heart itself is intelligent and generates an electromagnetic field that affects not only the body but others who come in contact with it. And depending on the thoughts and feelings, that electromagnetic field affects other people. And so even by nurturing and developing very compassionate, altruistic feelings, it changes the electromagnetic field generated from the heart and produces more productive results for those individuals. And they've proven this time and again in the workplace, in the schoolroom, and so forth. So this is scientific. They're only confirming in modern times through science a very ancient idea that we are talking about magnetic, electromagnetic vibrations, and that thoughts and feelings are things, they're potencies, they generate certain frequencies, and we attract to us, and we repel from us by the very power of our thought and feeling certain influences. So the kinds of thoughts, and when it comes to the previous contribution, the kinds of thoughts and feelings we have in the waking state attract to us the kind of experiences we will have in the dream state and in the deep sleep state, and vice versa. The kinds of thoughts and feelings we have electromagnetically in this waking state will make us, just as a TV receiver, more receptive to the experiences we have in those higher states. We'll finish with one last comment.
Yes, just that people should know it's heart math, M-A-T-H.
What did I say?
No, they may not have understood. It's M-A-T-H. And
heart math, H-E-A-R-T, heart math, yes.
One of the most incredible thoughts that comes from them is that the heart sends more messages to the brain than the brain sends to the heart.
Mm. Yes, you know, the heart influences the brain, yes. Wonderful idea to finish with. And to invite you next week, once again, to the last presentation in this umbrella theme of psychism and spirituality on the benefits and risks of developing psychic powers. And then for those that are interested, our study class in the Ocean of Theosophy this Wednesday on clairvoyance and clairaudience. Our meeting's adjourned.